talking about a home, talking about me and you. Things we'll do, I said a home,
talking about a home.
I'm talking about a one night stand. I wanna be your man, I said a home.
From the people who bring you Charleston Home and Design Magazine, the Charleston Home and Design Show, the Charleston Home and Outdoor Living Festival, the Charleston Fall Home Show, CharlestonHomeAndDesign.com, and TryAnInteriorDesigner.com, this is Talking About a Home. Talking About a Home is a home show on the radio, featuring interviews with local experts, home tips, trends, and ideas you need to know to make your home better. I'm Michael Blaze with Five Star Real Estate, and this is Talking About a Home.
Take me home to the place.
Good afternoon and Happy New Year, everyone. I'm Tim Barkley with Charleston Home and Design Magazine, and I want to thank you for listening to Talking About a home show on the radio. That was Take Me Home, Country Roads by John Denver, in addition to the great Chris Isaacs Talking About a Home, and special thanks to our show producer, Christine Sinanen, for coming up with today's home theme song. Well, in addition to our radio show Talking About a Home, we also publish Charleston Home and Design Magazine, winner of the American Society of Interior Designers Excellence in Design Media Award, and also winner of the American Institute of Architects Charleston Chapter's Honor Award for Journalism. You may also be familiar with the three custom home shows we organize, the Charleston Home and Design Show, which takes place every January. And it's actually coming up January 26th through the 28th at the Gilliard Center in downtown Charleston. Charleston's only open-air home show, the Charleston Home and Outdoor Living Festival, which happens every April at Volvo Car Stadium on Daniel Island. And the Charleston Fall Home Show, which happens every August, also at the Gilliard Center in downtown Charleston. Well, today we've got a great show lined up for you. We're going to be talking with Drew Taylor with Carpenters Restoration, and they have a very interesting business model. First of all, they're craftsmen that can build custom cabinetry for you, and so they're really at the kind of the top of the food chain as far as craftsmen go. So they do very, very beautiful building custom cabinets. But what makes them a little bit different is if you have a dated kitchen, you've got existing cabinetry that's in pretty good shape, they will actually give you the option of refinishing the cabinetry that you have already in place. And so they can completely update your kitchen with new drawers and new cabinet doors, and then put on the hardware, the slow close drawer hardware, the slow close cabinet door hardware, which if you don't have in your kitchen, you're missing out. It's a wonderful feature. But they can help you whether you need new cabinetry or you're looking to refinish your cabinetry. They are true craftsmen. Also, Camille Wish with Terrace Oaks Antiques. Kevin O'Connor. And Kevin O'Connor, I say it like, hey, no big deal, Kevin O'Connor. He, if you don't recognize that name, he is he's one of the stars of This Old House. And they've been in Charleston all this past fall. Have been working with custom builder Mark Regal-Buto and also architect Bill Huey on a house down on Hazel Street. And they've been filming all this past fall, and you're going to be seeing This Old House, their first time ever in Charleston, when the show premieres in April. So be on the lookout for that. Lots of Charleston scenes will pop up, and you'll also see a lot of locals. But I sat down with Kevin O'Connor when he was in town recently, and it's a very nice interview. You gotta listen in for that. And then finally, we're going to be talking with the Charleston Symphony Orchestra League's designer show house coordinators, and Patricia Tully and Claudia Porter. These are the ladies that that make all the arrangements. They work with all of the designers, motivating them to be part of their designer show house. And we're going to be talking to them about the 2018 Charleston Symphony Orchestra League designer show house and what's involved there. Wanted to throw out a quick plug for the Charleston Home and Design Show coming up January 26th through the 28th. I mentioned this old house and us talking to Kevin O'Connor. We want you to come out on Sunday, January 28th. We've invited a builder, Mark Regalbuto of Renew Urban Charleston, and also architect Bill Huey of Bill Huey and Associates. These are the two gentlemen, locals that have been working with the This Old House folks, Kevin O'Connor and Tom Silva and the entire This Old House crew. And they're going to be giving a nice talk on what their experience was like and what to expect when This Old House Charleston premieres in April 2018. And it's completely free. So we want you. That's one good reason to come out to the Charleston Home and Design Show on January 28th, the final day of the show on Sunday. Also on Saturday and Sunday, the 27th and 28th of January, we've got something called Inside the Architect's Mind, where we have arranged to have a couple of Charleston's best architects who will be on hand, and they're going to be kind of walking you through specific projects that they've worked on, and it's really, really interesting. You're going to pick up lots of really good tips, whether you decide to use an architect or not. The interesting thing is, these architects who have given these talks, they've picked up clients as a result. There was one lady who sat through about four of these Inside the Architect Mind talks, and she ended up sticking around and talking to one of the architects after, and ended up hiring them right in the spot. So that's pretty cool. We've also got a lot of free seminars going on both Saturday and Sunday in the shared lobby area at the Gilliard. Free admission on Friday. We're continuing that tradition. From 11 a.m. until 5 p.m. on Friday, January 26th, if you can duck out of work a little bit early. Free admission to see the show. The show's been sold out, by the way, since September. And we have been very, very picky when it comes to choosing, curating the Charleston Home and Design Show, making sure that we have as many categories represented as possible, because people come to the show, they have a variety of needs. We want to make sure we have all of their needs covered, that there's a vendor that you can talk to, whatever need you have. And this is really cool. On Saturday and Sunday after 2 p.m., admission is only $2 per person. And on Saturday, we're giving away a $21 Tervis tumbler with your $2 paid admission on Saturday. And then on Sunday, we're giving away a $15 Sweetgrass keyring from Coastal Touch when you pay that $2 admission. So a lot of great things happening at the Charleston Home and Design Show. Visit charlestonhomeanddesignshow.com for more information. Happy New Year, and we'll talk to you in the new year. If you're just joining us, I'm Tim Barkley with Charleston Home and Design Magazine, and now we're talking with cabinet maker Drew Taylor with Carpenters Restoration. How are you doing, Drew?
Good. How are you doing, Tim?
Good. Drew, take a moment and tell everybody about Carpenters Restoration.
Well, we are a custom cabinet and refinishing shop. Mm-hmm. Our main location is in the Old Village in Mount Pleasant, and we've been in operation for about 36, 37 years now.
Okay.
Serving the Low Country and beyond.
Mm-hmm.
And we offer a variety of services within cabinetry and furniture, the world of cabinetry and furniture.
Mm-hmm.
From repairing a simple chair, maybe, that's been in the family for a really long time and means enough that you would get it repaired, to refinishing your kitchen, to building you, you know, a brand new kitchen, and everything in between. So it's a very sort of diverse portfolio for services for people, and we can really take care of a lot of needs that are inside the house when it comes to furniture and cabinetry.
Very good. Well, I'm going to tell our audience about a quick story about a piece of furniture that Carpenters Restoration did work on for me in just a second. But first, I wanted to let's talk about you know, kind of the bread and butter things that Carpenters Restoration does, mainly cabinetry, right?
Yeah, that's where a lot of the where it's trending, you know, the from furniture to cabinetry.
Right. So Carpenters Restoration, if someone wants new custom made cabinets for their kitchen or their bathroom or other parts of the house, that's something that Carpenters Restoration can help with.
Yeah, absolutely. Actually, in the spring, we did an expansion and bought a shop just outside of Mount Pleasant up in McClellanville. And it's about 6,000 square feet, and dropped in some new machines. And we're able to offer a full line now of custom cabinets. And that's sort of our production shop out there. And we still have our furniture shop and studio down in the Old Village.
There are several different companies around town that sell cabinetry, and they're getting their cabinetry made from a manufacturer outside of Charleston. And I guess a question that I would have if I was talking to Carpenters Restoration would be, how does the quality compare of new cabinets made by Carpenters Restoration versus maybe one of these manufacturers outside of Charleston?
Yeah, absolutely. The prefab approach is definitely out there, and there's tons of options. The difference, I think, when you're dealing with something that's closer to home, a lot of your materials can come from closer to home, and these days that seems to matter a little more to people. Even as far as getting unique materials that are used on more of like a architectural millwork within a kitchen, say floating shelves from a reclaimed barn, or barn doors built out of wood from, you know, maybe someone's property that they know, or and then even down to the plywood and stuff that we use. We try to use all domestic materials. Anything that we're bringing in, we're trying to bring it in as close to us as possible. And that even just helps with the quality, just because of the regulations that those things are under, and you know, it's just a better approach.
Like, for example, a lot of people are opting to have, when they get new cabinets for their kitchen, they're opting to go with like a paint versus a stain, for example. So will the custom made cabinets from Carpenters Restoration, will those look as good or better than some of these cabinets that maybe are that people are ordering painted cabinets from another manufacturer?
Yeah, absolutely. One of the unique things about our shop is that our roots were in furniture and finishing, really. So our history is in finish. We know finish. And we've stayed with the growth and the development of, you know, the technology behind finish. So we're using the same stuff that we use on all our furniture coats. So we do a ton of refinishing furniture. And we're using that same stuff, but using pigments in it to achieve, you know, whatever custom color a customer can see or want. And we're able to wrap, you know, put that in a really high quality finish that is different than a prefab, which is a lot of times more industrial based. So they're using stuff that's made to make the product quick and get it shipped and get it out there. Whereas we're using stuff that has slightly longer cure times, but the durability of, you know, true custom cabinetry or custom furniture.
Gotcha. Okay. And then Carpenters Restoration, you folks can also come into someone's kitchen. And if depending on what kind of condition the existing cabinetry is, you can update that cabinetry. For example, let's say somebody's got you know, kind of that stained oak look for cabinets that my mother loves, but you know, that's I'm not my mother, and so I like a nice painted look, maybe with shaker style doors and the nice, you know, if this was an old kitchen now, maybe replacing the door
hardware,
the door hardware and the slides and everything. Mm-hmm, and is that something that Carpenter's Restoration could help with?
Yeah, I think that's where we offer a unique service, where it's sort of the hybrid of custom cabinetry and refinishing. We can go into a space and see what is useful, what still has life, and what can be transformed, and then elements that need to be updated, need to be replaced, need to be repaired. Sometimes customers will want that oak kitchen that you're talking about transformed into a solid color, and we can sometimes use their doors and transform them just by changing the color. We can also offer custom cabinetry within that. So big trend right now is people are getting rid of the desk areas that were classically in mm-hmm. kitchens, and that's going to more storage space. People mm-hmm. want more storage space, so they're converting it into either a pantry or maybe a wet bar, a dry bar, something that's functional with entertaining and stuff. Mm-hmm. So we're able to offer that within a refinished job, where mm-hmm. we're also changing the color, updating hardware, all that kind of stuff. Mm.
Yeah. Interesting. Okay, so as long as the and how would someone know if the existing cabinet boxes are in good enough shape to be transformed?
Right. Well, we generally start the conversation with the customer with the one like a meeting inside their space, inside the kitchen, and you know if they're doing their kitchen, and we can look at the boxes and see what kind of shape they're in. Sometimes people even know, you know, how old they are and know quite a bit about them, and you can just see that they're good. They're just, it's really aesthetically not pleasing mm-hmm. to them. So it's easy to spot, and because we offer both services, we're not looking to push someone in either one direction. It's really what's best for that particular project.
Mm-hmm.
Because sometimes it doesn't make sense to replace a whole heck of a lot. Sometimes it makes sense to change the things that the customer's really talking about. And a lot of times that does come down to sort of the outside shell of something and then the functionality of different components. Soft close is a big one these days on doors mm-hmm. and drawers. Pull out, you know, hardware where, you know, it's easier to access the back of a shelf. It's that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. That's something that really makes Carpenter's Restoration unique, because someone might talk to a standard traditional cabinet company, and they would say, no, we need to tear out all these cabinets.
Yeah, exactly.
Because they don't have that within their scope of being able to reuse some of the existing cabinetry, which so you're not really going to be pressuring them to get all new stuff. You mm-hmm. can, if the boxes are usable, you're perfectly fine to refinish those.
Absolutely. It's another side of the shop. So if it's more prudent to do that, it's better for both the customer and the shop, really.
Mm-hmm.
If we only offered one product, then yeah, everyone would need to somehow fit within that one product. But because we can offer multiple services, we can really look to the needs and care for that customer and still thrive in the shop.
Mm-hmm. So we've been talking about the cabinetry end of Carpenter's Restoration, but Carpenter's Restoration also can help with restoring or refinishing furniture. And I was going to tell you that quick story. I inherited a really neat farm table from my aunt and uncle, and my uncle had built it back in the 30s or 40s out of cypress, and we had it stained, and I didn't really like the stain. We brought it to Carpenter's Restoration, and you folks painted it and gave it a real nice kind of distressed look.
Mm-hmm.
Also painted the ladder back chairs that went with it, and also the benches that went with it, and it looks great. It looks like it you know was original to when the table and chairs were first made, and very, very pleased. My family uses that table every single day. It's mm-hmm. an heirloom that will be handed down to my kids. So but we're almost out of time. I wanted to ask you, how can folks get more information about Carpenter's Restoration?
Well, we try to make communication easy, so you can call us. Mm-hmm. Our phone number is 843-884-3411. And you can visit us on the web, carpentersrestoration.com. And you can even drop by the shop or the studio in Mount Pleasant, 748B King Street, in Mount Pleasant.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah.
Okay.
We'll get back to you, or we'll set up a time to meet, or whatever we, whatever our first step would be.
Good deal. And also look for Carpenter's Restoration in the winter issue of Charleston Home and Design Magazine, and also at the Charleston Home and Design Show happening January 26th through the 28th at the Gilliard Center downtown. Well, we've been talking with Drew Taylor with Carpenter's Restoration. Thanks so much, Drew. If you're just joining us, I'm Tim Barkley with Charleston Home and Design Magazine, and now we're talking with Camille Wish with Terrace Oaks Antiques. How are you, Camille?
I'm doing well, Tim. How are you?
Good, good. Camille, take a moment and tell everybody about Terrace Oaks Antiques.
Terrace Oaks Antiques has been in business for 29 years. We're located at 2037 Maybank Highway on James Island.
Mm-hmm.
Our telephone number is 843-795-9689, and you can find us on our webpage at www.terraceoaksantiques.com.
Okay, great. So Terrace Oaks Antiques, you're over on James Island, and you've been in business for coming up on 30 years next year, and you must have a lot of happy customers over those years.
We do. We're thrilled with all of our repeat customers. We get a lot of new customers as well that have heard from the repeats and the frequent flyers, as I call them, so it's wonderful to have them come back year after year.
Mm-hmm. And Terrace Oaks Antiques, you folks have got a really good reputation because when some of the movie production companies come to town, they ask around about where they can buy props and different things to go with the scenes that they're shooting. And a lot of those production companies go to Terrace Oaks Antiques.
They do, absolutely. We not only do we sell to them, but we rent to them as well, which is a nice deal for them. And then if the item comes back, we can always say that it's been seen in you know, a particular movie. So it gives it a little provenance.
Raise the marquee value.
That's right.
That's great. Well, we're in the holiday season, and does Terrace Oaks Antiques change your what you're displaying or selling this time of year?
We do. A lot of the vendors start bringing out their holiday decorations, whether it was vintage Halloween, vintage Thanksgiving, or Christmas as well. Mm-hmm. Yes.
And what about gift items? Because, a lot of times people get stressed out about what they, what they can buy for someone, a unique gift. No one likes to go the gift card route. But I've always found that buying someone something vintage, some sort of an antique is a very, very personal, very individual, unique kind of gift that the recipient really appreciates.
It is, and we do have a lot of people coming in asking for gifts to give, and we try to probe the customer as to who it's going for, what things that they like, and we usually can find something in the shop that would suit them perfectly.
Mm-hmm. And the nice thing is you really can find like some very unique gifts at a very low price for coworkers or maybe neighbors or family members, that kind of thing.
You can, absolutely. We have items priced anywhere from postcards at around $1, $2, on up from there. So mm-hmm. We've got a wide variety.
Right. I remember when I first moved to Charleston, I was invited to the, when I was in radio at the time, the general manager's home, and I wanted to bring a gift, a unique gift, and found like an old Charleston yearbook, City of Charleston yearbook that had like the census figures and for the city and had some, they were describing the races of the people living in Charleston, kind of in those non-politically correct terms that you don't hear today.
You're right. Those are wonderful things to have in the shop, and they usually fly out the door very quickly. We do try to have a lot of Charleston-related items in there, whether they're local authors, local books, out-of-print books. Mm-hmm. But a lot of those city directories are really fascinating to read.
Yeah, and very inexpensive. I think it was less than $10, you know, for something like that. What about the people who are decorating for Christmas? What about ornaments and vintage Christmas decorations?
We do have a great variety of that. It's in the shop now. It sells very, very quickly because a lot of people will use the vintage elves or Santas or ornaments. And nowadays they're taking them and making wreaths out of them for their front door or inside their house. A lot of people are replacing ornaments that have been broken over the years or they remember as a child. And they want to have the vintage ornaments on their tree.
Mm-hmm. What about does Terrace Oaks Antique sell like any vintage toys or anything like that?
We do have toys in there as well. We have some old tin toys, some old wooden toys. We have great old children's books as well. So we do have a variety of that too.
Very
yeah.
Nice. How about for folks that are planning seasonal parties?
We have wonderful, wonderful 1950s and 60s barware, old-fashioned glasses. Those seem to be the hot commodity around Christmas time, Thanksgiving time. We have a nice variety of those. We have decanters, decanter labels. We have muddlers. We have sterling silver sippers where you can actually have your mint juleps and sip through a sterling straw.
Oh, neat.
If you want to do that, just to be a little fancy. Kids seem to like those for their drinks. You know, it kind of makes them feel like they're an adult and enjoying the party
mm-hmm.
as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Silverware?
We have lots of silverware, dinnerware. We have sterling and silver plate. We have pretty much all the popular patterns of sterling, whether they were Francis I or Chantilly, Strasbourg. I can name tons of them. We do have silver plate, which is less expensive, but equally as beautiful. And a lot of people nowadays mix and match their table settings, so it's nice to have different plates, different silverware, different type of glasses on the table for your parties.
Mm-hmm. What about anything for like the man around the house, like that may be difficult to buy for? Like there's you've got a section that has a lot of military, old World War II and Civil War items.
We do. He has anything. He also has old coins as well, if you're into coins. Lots of military memorabilia, Civil War memorabilia. A good bit of it has been dug up in Charleston. Mm. We have old Charleston bottles as well. We also have old tools that a lot of men like. A lot of men still use the old tools with wooden handles, the folding rulers. So we have a good variety for men as well.
Mm. And you know, if you've got a man cave, those make great decorations for the walls too.
They absolutely do.
I'm putting you on the spot, but what would be like the most valuable item that Terrace Oaks Antiques has right now?
Right now, it probably would be a brooch that we have that's absolutely stunning. It's platinum with what they call rough-cut diamonds with an opal in the middle, and the opal is a beautiful, vivid, vivid blue-green. Mm. I think it's priced at about $1,500.
Oh, wow.
And
nice.
It's just stunning, one-of-a-kind type piece.
And how old is it?
It's probably about the 1840s.
Wow.
Yeah.
Interesting. That's the great thing is every item every antique you buy kind of comes with a story. And the staff at Terrace Oaks Antiques, they're always so nice. They'll greet you at the door and probably be able to give you a backstory on some of the items that you might find there.
We absolutely can. We are very knowledgeable. The staff is wonderful. They know what's in the shop. If they aren't sure we have it, they'll be glad to help you locate it or try and find it for you while you're walking around looking as well.
Mm-hmm. How many vendors does Terrace Oaks Antiques have?
We have 90 vendors. We're a 10,000 square foot building, two floors. We are climate controlled, and we do have great parking.
Mm-hmm. And how often does the merchandise turn over?
Daily.
Really?
Absolutely daily.
So
yeah.
The old recommending people come by early and often is important.
That's correct. And I've always said, if you see something and it pulls at your heartstrings and you fall in love with it, you need to get it then, because more than likely it will not be there when you come back.
Right, right. Terrace Oaks Antiques is not like maybe some of the the antique stores you see downtown either. It's a very approachable kind of antique store, very reasonable prices.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I do think there are a lot of stores downtown that are very good stores and have very great, wonderful quality merchandise in them as well.
Oh yeah, I don't mean to disparage any of the. It's just different.
It is different.
And that's the thing. I like antiques that maybe I can afford.
Right, I understand.
How can folks get more information about Terrace Oaks Antiques?
Our store hours are Monday through Saturday, 10 to 5:30. Webpage is www.terraceoaksantiques.com. We are also on Facebook and on Instagram, so be sure to check out those as well.
Okay, great. Well, we have been talking with Camille Wish with Terrace Oaks Antiques. Thanks so much, Camille.
Thank you.
I'm Tim Barkley with Charleston Home and Design Magazine. And now we're speaking with Kevin O'Connor, one of the stars of PBS's This Old House, about their first ever project they've tackled here in Charleston, South Carolina. Kevin, thanks for taking a few minutes to speak with us at Talking About a Home.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
So This Old House has been involved in many projects over the years, primarily in the Northeast, and I guess I'm just surmising that as a viewer. So my first question is, what took you folks so long to finally showcase a project in Charleston?
Well, you're right about the Northeast part. That's home base for us. That's where we live. That's where the guys work. And it's real guys, you know, who are contractors going to a real job site. And as you know, we don't want to drive too far every morning at 6 a.m. So a lot of the stuff we do is in our backyard. But we do make an effort to get on the road. And we have gotten on the road a lot in the last 39 years, if you can imagine that. It's taken us to California, to Texas. It's taken us out of the country once or twice and all over the country. We've wanted to come to Charleston for a very long time. And we've wanted to because we know about the architectural richness. We know about the beautiful Southern style. We know how magnificent the town is, the sort of depth and the quality of the old homes here. But it's a little bit of alchemy in terms of, you know, how do you find a house in a city that's ready to go at the right time? And, you know, how does it beat out doing a bungalow in Austin or Spanish Colonial in Los Angeles? Mm-hmm. And so it really was just an alignment of the stars. It just kind of took that to get here. But here we are. Now we're here and we're psyched.
Well, that's great. Well, Charleston definitely welcomes This Old House. The home that is being restored for the TV show This Old House is on Hazel Street in downtown Charleston. How does this project differ from other projects This Old House has been involved in?
Well, the first thing is the style of house. Ours is that quintessential Charleston single. And so that was new to me, that sort of long, brick, tall, you know, two-story piazza type setup with a little private courtyard in the back. And we love taking these sort of unique styles for a walk. It's a great way to educate our audience as to the different architectural styles around the country. And then we sort of take a deep dive. You know, why do they build them this way? You know, what functions does the house provide the homeowners that's unique to this area? And that's a big part of our story. We joke, you know, the guys and I on the show, we joke that the house is the star. You know, the homeowners, they get a little bit of airtime, but it's mostly the house. And we've got ourselves a pretty good star here. It was built in the 1840s. We were fortunate that the owners, just prior to the current ones who we're working with, two elderly gentlemen lived there for 50 years or more. I think they were house proud originally, but it sort of fell into disrepair. So we had sort of the best of both worlds. They had done a good job of preserving original details and character. But when they finally passed on and we ended up working on the house, it was in pretty bad shape. And for us, that's great because there's a lot of work for us to do and a big transformation that can happen. So it's got pretty much everything we were looking for.
Is the construction of the house on Hazel Street different from other projects in other parts of the country?
In many respects, it is. In some respects, it isn't. It's old. We've seen the materials in the past. We've dealt with sort of the typical challenges of rot and decay and having to upgrade systems. We sort of see that all over the place. So in that respect, it's not that different. What makes it sort of unique is the layout. That tall, narrow type of house is definitely unique. It's brick, and we quite frankly don't work on a ton of brick homes. We have, obviously, but this is all brick. And that's great because we get the mason involved and we learn all the masonry stories. It provides some challenges because if we strip away the plaster and the homeowners have decided to leave a lot of the brick exposed, mm-hmm. For us, that means, you know, when you upgrade the systems, the plumbing, the HVAC, the electric, where do you hide everything? Again, great stories for our viewers. And then we've got this unique situation, which we've never had before, which is the cookhouse out back. You know, the former slaves' quarters, servants' quarters, the house that's attached but not directly connected in terms of living space. So we can learn about that, and we're going to convert that. You know, it's space that had never really been used as living quarters, and we're going to turn it into living quarters. And so now we've got to break through structural walls. We've got to convert. We've got to run systems. That's extremely unique for us.
You mentioned upgrading the HVAC and the plumbing and electrical. What other kinds of challenges have the construction team encountered?
It's a tight lot. It's a very tight lot. The first couple of weeks we were here, our dumpster got stuck in the driveway because it had slid about a half an inch to the left, which pushed it up into the porch. It's a historical building, so we have to live within the guidelines of all of the Charleston Board of Architectural Review. And we've got some. When we work outside of our home base, New England, we always partner with professionals who are from the area. So in this case, we've got a local architect, Bill Huey, who's fantastic and has got some great involvement with the BAR. Mark Rigobuto is a general contractor who does a lot of work here. So they're our eyes and ears. We rely on those guys. And they are helping us navigate through the preservation procedures, the BAR, and all that kind of stuff, which we like, actually. We love telling that story. But they're challenging because we have to sort of live by those guidelines.
I heard through the grapevine, one of our photographers has told us, for example, you were hiding, I think, the plumbing by building a beam that surrounded the plumbing lines, so it looks like an old beam.
Yeah, so, you know, again, when the house was built in brick and then plastered. So the interior walls had the plaster on it and a gap between plaster, lath, and the brick. So there's places to hide mechanicals. Much of that plaster is down and will stay down. So now there's very little place, there's very few places to hide stuff. And your photographer is right. We actually did a big scene where Tom Silva, our general contractor, was working with a local carpenter here to build a faux beam, something that would look like it was part of the framing structure for the house, but was a hollow cavity that allowed us to run the plumbing behind it. And the challenge there, building a faux beam is not that difficult, but the challenge there is to make it fit in. Mm-hmm. There is, as you dig into the bones of this building, there are mortise and tenon, there are pegs holding the ceiling joists, the roof rafters together, the floor joists, things like that. And so our job is to kind of try to get some of the materials from the building, interpret the building techniques and style of the building, and then when we bring them out into the living space in the form of this faux beam to make it fit in. And we actually did it twice. The first take at it, we kind of looked at it and said, close, but not close enough, and went back and sort of redesigned real time and filmed the scene a second time because we really wanted to get it right. And those things are challenging, but they're also fun and they make for good content.
Definitely. I understand this old house has a new initiative called Generation Next.
Correct.
Tell us about that.
So the story is that there is a shortage of young people going into the skilled building trades in this country. Depending on whose numbers you look at, there's anywhere between 3, 5, 6 million jobs that currently exist These are not jobs that have to be created by some government program. These are jobs that currently exist that are unfilled because companies can't find people with the skills to do these jobs. And we've noticed it on our job site. Tom Silva, who's been doing this for 50 plus years, and Norm Abram, same. You know, these guys will tell you that it's never been harder to find people willing to go into construction and the building trade. So Generation Next is a multi-part plan where we are sharing that problem, the story of that problem with the country mm-hmm. through the television show, but we're also trying to do something about it. We've partnered with Mike Rowe from Dirty Jobs, mm-hmm. and he also runs the Mike Rowe Works Foundation. It raises money to give scholarships to young people who are going into the trades. Through our partners, we've already raised over $500,000 for his scholarship foundation. We're using the television show as an opportunity for Mike to share that story. He's done a great job articulating that better than I would say better than anyone else in the country. So he's been on the show a couple times. And we've actually did a national sort of casting call where we had apprentices. People applied and we brought apprentices to our job site, young people who were thinking about getting into the trades. And they've been working side by side with our guys, mm-hmm. which for a lot of people is sort of the dream opportunity.
Oh, yeah.
And we've put them on the show. You know, we let them speak. We, you know, let Tommy kick them around a little bit and show them what to do. And then we let them sort of, you know, show me what to do. So a little bit of everything. And it's just a way to tell people about the problem and show a lot of, hopefully, a lot of young people that there can be good jobs to be had in the building trades. And they should consider it as either an alternative to college, if that's not for them, or as something to do after college so mm-hmm. that they're gainfully employed.
That's great. Well, related to the This Old House initiative, Generation Next, you folks have taken a liking to the American College of Building Arts, which is located right here in Charleston. It's a four-year college that trains the next generation of stonemasons, carpenters, iron workers, and more on the old ways of building and restoring. How has This Old House involved the American College of Building Arts on your Charleston project?
Quite extensively, actually, and we're going to continue to do more of that. ACBA is unique in the sense that it gives you that four-year degree, but also gives the people, the kids, the training in these building arts. And I was fascinated by their origin story, this idea that after Hurricane Hugo, with all the damage to the historic homes, there weren't enough people to help rebuild, and sort of the town elders, the very interested people, said, you know, we need to do something about that. We need to bring these trades back. That's that idea that's going on nationally. It hit home hard here after Hugo, but that's the same idea going on nationally. So we are working with them. We're going to profile the school. I've been there a couple times already to film and to showcase what's going on, to hear their story, that origin story, what the courses are about, what the kids are like. But we're also partnering with the students and the professors there. They're going to end up building two projects at the school with their students. For our projects, one of them is going to be done by those young folks in blacksmithing. So they're going to build an iron gate for the front of the house that needs to be replaced. And then the timber framing carpentry students are going to be building a pergola for the back courtyard garden. And, you know, they're actually pretty sizable projects. But more importantly, you know, we're going to follow the process and we're going to show our audience those kids actually doing the work, the plans, the ideas, the work itself, and then the finished project product on the show when we install them sort of towards the end of the season. So it's a great way to showcase what we believe is an institution that's really getting it right. Mm-hmm. You know, is training people both academically but also in the skilled trades at the same time.
And I understand the graduates of American College of Building Arts are going to land a $70,000, $80,000 a year job as soon as they walk out with a graduate degree.
We've heard those stories. You know, that if there are 5 million skilled jobs out there that are, you know, exist and are unfilled, it does not surprise me when we hear that story over and over mm-hmm. that these kids come out and are employed. There is a, I believe, sort of a generation of people who grew up with older brothers and sisters or older friends, and they saw that unfortunate pattern of 4 years of college education at a very high price, accumulating an uncomfortable amount of student debt, and then getting not the job that they wanted or the job that can help them pay these things off. And so I think that's really changed a lot of people's focus. How do I get an education? How do I learn a trade? most importantly, how do I get a well-paying, secure job when that's all done?
Absolutely.
And I think ACPA is on the right track to do that.
Kevin, what's your background and how did you get involved in this whole house?
Well, I'm the host, so I'm the guy who goes around and talks to the experts and asks the questions. And my background is, I don't have a construction background. I was never in the trades myself. I was a homeowner who grew up watching the show, loved the show. And when my wife and I bought our first house, we specifically set out to buy a fixer-upper because we wanted to do the work ourselves. Partly because it's all we could afford, but also because we enjoy doing that stuff. And as soon as we kind of got into a jam, we turned the people that we thought were the best in the business, the ones that I had grown up watching, that was this old house. We wrote a letter to the magazine looking for some historical information. It very quickly turned into a crew coming out to the house to film the very first season of Ask This Old House. And I just stumbled into it after we had filmed that little segment. They offered me the host's job. Hmm. And we joke that, you know, the host's job is sort of to be the knucklehead to say to the experts, wait a second, you know, how did you do that? And what did you say again? And I guess when they came to the house to film that first episode, they said, yeah, you're a really good knucklehead. Come on board. But no turning back. It's been a great run.
That's great. This old house is really the standard bearer as it relates to all the DIY and HGTV type TV shows out there. How does it feel to be the original, the first TV show taking viewers on a journey into the construction process of old homes?
Well, it feels good. It feels like it comes with a bunch of responsibility. I was not there when this wonderful idea was created, and I was not part of the team that made it successful. I'm fortunate to work with the guys who were, which is remarkable. You know, when the show started in 1979 and Norm Abram and Richard Fathui won that first season, and then Tom Silva and Roger Cook came very quickly thereafter, and Russ Morash, who founded the show and directed it, you know, I still work with the first four of those guys, and I used to work with Russ for many years. So I'm very fortunate to be with them. It's pretty cool. It comes with a lot of responsibility. There's a lot of temptation with the success of other shows that do different things to sometimes turn our show into that, make the house the place for drama and flip it or smash it or crash it. And we've resisted those, and I'm glad we have. You know, it's about showing folks the right way to do things using the professionals who know how to do it. And we've kind of just stuck to that knitting. And I'm very proud and humbled to say that in addition to being the first, it's still the most watched. Mm-hmm. So it's been a sort of a time-tested formula. It's not for everybody. There's a lot of other people out there doing great things, especially in the world of social media. A lot of very talented people who have a similar sensibility. So we're certainly not the only game in town, but I'm very happy and humbled to be part of this game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think there's I call it an HGTV mentality, where in the course of 30 minutes, a house can go from, you know, the fixer-upper to, you know, the finished product. And that gives a wrong impression to viewers, where they kind of expect that in their own life. They want to be able to snap their fingers and the project just be completed and done. And you really never want to rush through a project. It's really quite the opposite. You're never going to have a good outcome, you know, if it's a 24-hour restoration or something.
Yeah, I mean, you don't want to rush. Things take longer and typically cost more. Good help is expensive. Doing things the right way tends to slow things down. I don't totally buy into the whole kind of, if you see it done in 30 minutes on TV, you have the expectation that it's going to be done in 30 minutes. I think we're able to sort of separate that entertainment from reality. And I've been in this discussion for years. We're a different show. You know, there's a whole bunch of shows out there that have a house as part of the program, but it's a show about entertainment, and the house happens to be the background for it. You know, I don't watch a crime drama and then expect the police to show up and solve a murder in 30 minutes either. You know, so I'm able to separate those two. But your point is well taken. And we've just stayed true to the message, which is, you know, craftsmanship is something that comes from people who have practiced the trade for decades. And quality work is something that, if you value it, is something that you're going to be satisfied with, but it's probably going to cost a little bit more, take a little bit more time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're sort of happy to show that. We like to entertain, but we primarily set out to educate.
Mm-hmm. We hope this old house likes Charleston, and will this old house be back to Charleston at some point?
We love Charleston, and we'll be back another 10 times or so while we wrap up these projects. Whether we come back for another project is hard to say. There's a lot of Charlestons out there that are wondering the same mm-hmm. thing you were wondering, which is mm-hmm. why is it taking you so long to get here? There's a lot of places to go. We have come back to places, so it's always a possibility.
Very good. Well, our listeners can watch the premiere of this old house in Charleston, I believe, at the beginning of April is when the new season will begin, and that you're filming now. So we're looking forward to that. We're also looking forward to having you and Tom Silva on the cover of Charleston Home and Design magazine, and look for that for our spring 2018 issue. Kevin, thanks so much for taking the time to speak with talking about our home. And please come back to Charleston anytime.
Thank you very much for having me. It was my pleasure.
I'm Tim Barkley with Charleston Home and Design Magazine, and I want to thank you for listening to Talking About a Home, a home show on the radio. Now joining us are Patty Tully and Claudia Porter with the Charleston Symphony Orchestra League Designer Show House. How are you ladies doing?
Fine, thank you.
Thank you for having us today.
Sure, sure. Ladies, take a moment and tell everybody about the Charleston Symphony Orchestra League Designer Show House.
Well, every year we do a Designer Show House, and this will be our 41st year of doing one. We open the house for a month in the springtime, and we ask local interior designers to come in and each do a different room. The house is open to the public, and it's our major fundraiser for the year.
Gotcha. Okay, good deal. And so for 40 years, the Charleston Symphony Orchestra League has organized this Designer Show House?
Yes, that's right. And we're looking for a house now for our 41st year. What we look for, Tim, in a house is a historic house on the peninsula. We really like the South of Broad area, but other areas have been very successful. We need a minimum of 3,500 square feet, a place for a cafe in the garden, so a garden space, and space for our boutique. We're a full-service designer show house.
Okay, good deal. And how long typically is the show house open to the public?
We're open for a month, so we open in mid-March with a big preview party, and we're open until mid-April. All of the work we do in the house is done in the January-February time frame, and we return the house to the owner in May. We do a design session with all of our designers and our owner. So our owners have veto power, so that when we're done, the owner can be happy with the house that they're left with.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. And typically, how do you come across a home and a motivated homeowner that's willing to offer up their house for such a worthy project?
Well, we talk to a lot of the realtors in town. Often a house has been on the market for a while, and people are interested in having an extra 3,000 people see their house, which traditionally they have sold while we've had them, but not always, and we can't promise that, of course. Otherwise, we have had houses that came to us through people doing construction and design work, and we are hoping to hear from somebody now who has the perfect house for the 2018 year.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. And you mentioned that you're looking for a home on the peninsula, south of Broad, ideally 3,500 square feet or greater. And what does the homeowner have to do? What's involved with what the homeowner is required to do?
Well, the homeowner has to be willing to vacate their home for 4 months, or if they haven't moved in yet, to delay moving in if they were planning to move in. They need to agree to work with us and with the designers on the paint colors, wallpaper,
any changes to finishings. They have an opportunity to veto, as Patty said, anything that would be a permanent change to the home.
Mm-hmm. And if a homeowner had like a was undergoing a remodel project or was planning to renovate that home, would that be good timing for typically to maybe be involved with the CSOL Designer Show House?
Well, we don't do construction work, but we do design. So yes, depending on where you are in the project. But sometimes our designers can help complete some of the work. They can get donations or maybe get discounted prices for our owners to complete a project. We have done kitchens in the past, but that does incur expense of the owner, but with a discount in mind.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. Well, and what a feather in your cap to be able to, be able to brag to people in the future about how this your house was so nice that it was chosen to be part of the Charleston Symphony Orchestra League Designer Show House. I mean, it's a big feather in your cap. Tell us what this benefits. So the Designer Show House is open for a month, and people are buying tickets to walk through the house to get inspiration and ideas. What is the nonprofit that's benefiting?
The Charleston Symphony Orchestra League has been around for over 50 years, and we raise money for the Charleston Symphony Orchestra, which is one of the cultural treasures of the city. We give each year about $200,000 to the orchestra, which is used to support their performances, which are typically at the Gilliard, but also in many other locations around the city. We also give over $30,000 a year in music scholarships to students who are 10 to 18 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So we do everything we can to support music in the Charleston community and to inspire generations to come.
Mm-hmm. Very good. And you folks just recently had you do another tour out on Kiowa, right?
Yes, we just had our Kiowa and Seabrook tour of homes. We had seven homes open, three on Kiowa, three on Seabrook, and then one on Betsy Carrison Parkway. And that was a wonderful, successful event. We had over 600 people touring the homes.
Well, that's great. That's great. Well, right now the big priority is finding this house that will be the 2018 Charleston Symphony Orchestra League Designer Show House. And how can folks reach out to you if they're they might be listening and they'd like to get more information about maybe having their house chosen as the house on this tour?
Well, they can contact me. If email address of pattytully@gmail.com. That's pattitully@gmail.com. Thank you.
And you can also reach out to Charleston Home and Design Magazine, and we'd be happy to pass on contact information for both Patty and Claudia for if you're interested in getting more information about maybe being that house that is the 2018 Charleston Symphony Orchestra League Designer Show House. Well, good deal. Well, we're very excited to promote the home, and I hope you ladies will come back again. We'd love to talk to you about the progress, and we would love to be able to talk to some of the designers about what they have planned once the planning is a little bit further along. Well, we have been talking with Patty Tully and Claudia Porter with the Charleston Symphony Orchestra League Designer Show House. Thanks so much, ladies.
Been listening to Talking About a Home show on the radio.
Talking About a Home is brought to you by the publishers of Charleston Home and Design Magazine and the organizers of the Charleston Home and Design Show, the Charleston Home and Outdoor Living Festival, and the Charleston Fall Home Show. To make contact with any of the companies featured today, visit charlestonhomeanddesign.com. Home to over 200 local home-related companies motivated to work with you. That's charlestonhomeanddesign.com. Tune in next Saturday.